What lessons, missional lessons, might we learn from Jesus himself? Hello, welcome to Good Word. I am your host, David Thomas, the host for several of these discussions. I'm happy to have two conversation partners, Paul Dibdol, who is a
Missiologist,
that's the word I was looking for, and Brant Berglund, who is a New Testament professor. We are talking about Christian missions for 13 weeks, and today our focus is on Jesus, the master of missions. And so, gentlemen, I throw out to you this question: was Jesus missional? How was he missional? What lessons might we learn for our own edification by looking at what he did?
I think Jesus was missional. He came with a purpose, with a mission. There was something for him to accomplish here. And maybe I'll just start with one lesson that I think is important, is patience. So
it's a virtue possessed if you can.
Right? Yeah. God comes to earth in Jesus Christ, and most of his life is spent in obscurity, working in a carpenter shop. And I think this is not wasted time for him, but a time of drawing close to people, of being fully enculturated, fully identifying with people. He's not a drive-in one day, preach a sermon, drive out the next day kind of mission missionary.
So do you think that the carpenter shop is a good preparation for mission in his case? I'm not saying that for everybody, but I'm saying in his case it's
you not would... wasted time. I cannot believe that God would come to earth and waste the first 30 years of his life essentially working in a carpenter shop. There had to have been value in that process.
And I wonder, Paul, you know, you look at missionaries who go into places where they're giving a message that maybe hasn't been heard. How long do they need to be there observing people, understanding the culture, understanding even the language? And I don't mean the words, but the way in which people communicate in that culture. Mm-hmm. How long did Jesus spend in the carpenter shop watching people? Not like we do at an airport, but actually observing their thought process, what made them tick, what was important and valuable to them, and then crafting ways that he might share.
Yeah. And, you know, the reason I jogged you, Paul, is that I think also that there is tremendous missional power and value in being common, meaning that if I am some high and lifted up authority and you are quote, ordinary citizens, you're going to be initially either resistant or suspicious. You're going to think, well, this is not an ordinary person. I think in my own life of the mileage I have gotten out of doing common things. I recently had a long visit with people on trucks and diesel engines, and it's interesting the conversations that come out of that, because they think, oh yeah, he may be a professor, but he's common. And I wonder if this didn't work for Jesus. I want to push you back a little bit, though, Paul. You talked about God coming down from heaven to earth, and I think that that's something that we ought to talk about here, known as the great condescension, Jesus leaving what I call number one Celestial Avenue and coming down to be born in a barn. That is actually a missional transaction.
Absolutely. The gospel is not proclaimed with a thundering voice from the heavens. Pamphlets are not dropped all over the country, but God comes in the flesh, drawing close to people, the incarnation, the condescension, a crucial missional principle.
And I think of the sacrificial element in that, what theologically known as the great condescension. Think of the level of sacrifice that was involved, self-sacrifice that was involved in that. What about Jesus with missional intents for his own people, the Jewish people? What do we see anything there that we could reflect on?
We see several places where Jesus himself, in sending out his disciples, said, go only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And he states it in Luke that he says, my mission is to Israel first. And if we think about even the context of Daniel 9 and a prophecy that said the Messiah would confirm a covenant with many for 1 week, a covenant with his people Israel, Jesus focused on Israel first. That does not mean he excluded those on the border regions that were within his purview, and we'll even see that he goes into Samaria. But it was for the Jewish people who had already had a prophetic message of who the Messiah was to be that he goes first, hoping maybe they already knew a little.
Yeah, I've been able to go to the Middle East several times, and I have been thoroughly intrigued by the little town or the city of Capernaum. Not only is it nicely situated on the edge of the lake, but when you go there and you listen to the tour guide, they put together things that we don't often put together ourselves, that all the episodes in Jesus' ministry that are either based in Capernaum or they occur as was after he leaves Capernaum. And so I don't know if you see anything interesting about that. Just a base. And it's not a main center. It's a little town where he kind of sets himself.
Yeah, well, it is interesting that Jesus, most of his ministry is in not the cultural capital of the world at that time, not even in Jerusalem, which was important even then. But it's in the northern region of Galilee. It was not considered high society by any stretch there. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of his – well, that's not just home base, but that's kind of his intervention point, so to speak, into history is in that location. So,
and it was when he was based in Capernaum that he had his highest popularity, was it not? Because, I mean, the feeding of the 5,000 takes place nearby there. They wanted to crown him king. I guess Jerusalem was too troubled a place. There was too much trouble, the possibility of too much trouble.
Now, if we read the Gospel of John, John has Jesus heading to Jerusalem frequently for each of the festivals, and Jerusalem plays a central part, but every time Jesus goes, there's trouble.
Yeah.
And it's up in Capernaum
and
where—
And then he leaves, too.
He does. He needs to get out and has to distance himself from the religious leaders.
Do you have any thoughts on people outside of Jesus, his own group, his own?
Yeah, there are occasions in Jesus' ministry where we see certainly that his interest extends beyond just his own Jewish brothers and sisters. So we have Jesus traveling all the way across a lake, dealing with a man who suffers from demonic possession. And in the story, we read about the townspeople and the herd of pigs and so forth. Clearly, this is not a Jewish area. Yeah, yeah. Jews don't herd pigs. But Jesus, who then, after this deliverance of this man, gets back in the boat and goes back across. He makes this journey for the one man, essentially, who is not a Jew. And that's just one of the illustrations. Yeah. But there are a number of them in his ministry where he reaches out in surprising ways, or when he upholds the example of someone that the Jews would have typically not appreciated. So the parable of the Good Samaritan, for example, where Jesus talks about this person from a different people group, a different religion even, and speaks of them in a positive kind of way.
By the way, the story of the healing of that demoniac has some of my favorite words, scripture words of all, where it says that when it was over, he was seated, clothed, and in his right mind. Mm-hmm. The transformation is enormous. Mm-hmm. So, and what about the centurion, by the way, who Jesus called a man of great faith, in fact, held him up as an example, saying that I haven't seen such faith even here locally.
And what's interesting about the centurion is he is not approached by Jesus. Jesus is approached by him and comes to Jesus and says, or even says, look, you don't even need to come to my home. I don't need you at my home. I just need your word, and that'll be enough to heal my servant.
Yeah, that's a remarkable statement of faith. So. So do we have any incidents where Jesus interact with Gentiles, for example?
Well, some of these would be examples. Anyone that was not a Jew
was a Gentile.
Is a Gentile. Yeah, yeah. So the
Well, I'm thinking more like, well, I guess the centurion was probably Roman, but
he would have been Roman. And then we have the Syrophoenician woman, the Canaanite woman, where she's up by Sidon, and Jesus actually seems to go out of his way to meet her, even though his response to her at first is, it seems crass. It seems maybe almost antagonistic, that it puts his disciples in their place, because it's probably the exact things they're thinking. And then Jesus turns and offers her what she's asking, to have her daughter healed.
So, I mean, can we say that Jesus manifested any intentionality to take the gospel to the Gentiles?
I think so, and this comes back to issues of mission strategy. I think sometimes we feel like the more broadly we cast a message, the better it is. And I think Jesus may his own ministry may indicate to us that a deeply focused ministry to change even a small group of people and equip them to carry on the ministry is perhaps a wise way to go, instead of a kind of shallow broadcast of the message. So Jesus invests in his disciples, and he invests in those people that are most culturally similar to him, and gives them the instruction, the task, the responsibility of continuing that process, kind of the ripples that will go out then from them to these other people groups. But Jesus does focus primarily, I think, with those that are most culturally similar to him.
You remind me that Jesus had, there are many one-person audiences that are recorded this. What about the Great Commission? Because that came from the lips of Jesus. I mean, what kind of intentionality does that demonstrate?
Sure, it seems to broaden. And yet we have, following the Synoptic Gospels and John, we have Acts that gives us maybe a little more specificity in the Great Commission. You'll go to Jerusalem and you'll be my disciples there, and then Judea, then Samaria, and the ends of the earth. And so it expands throughout the book of Acts. So the Great Commission, yes, the goal is to reach the world, but even then there's a process. Paul, you use the word ripples. I like that analogy.
The kind of stages. So clearly, Great Commission, go and make disciples of all nations. Yeah. Those are the words of Jesus. But as Brant has just said, there are stages, I think, even in that process.
Yeah. And actually, that Great Commission really provides the motivation that has driven Christian missions for a long, long time.
It is, and I'd like to point out the Greek word there, the word nations is ethnos, and in the plural it often means Gentiles. So go and make disciples of all the Gentiles, which if Matthew, as we think, is written for a Jewish audience, that's a challenging statement.
Yeah. I remember reading somebody, an African man, who said that these verses have made the Western church the go-to church. Not the come and stay, but the go-to. Go there and do your thing, and then you go back home again, which is kind of an interesting thought. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much. I think our time is winding down here, but I appreciate your insights, and we'll look forward next week to visiting with you again. My thanks also to David Olson, our engineer, and we extend thanks to you, those of you who listen to Good Word. For Good Word, I'm David Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.